This week on the floor of the Senate, the primary issue that we will be dealing with is the nomination of Elena Kagan to be the next justice of the Supreme Court. I expect that there will be a minimum of 2 or 3, maybe even 4 or 5 days of debate with regard to this nomination when there will ultimately be a vote. Now, I have decided that when we do vote, I will vote no on her nomination for a couple of major reasons. First and foremost, I've become convinced that she believes that the judiciary must be much more aggressive and activist in its activities than most Americans, and particularly most Idahoans, believe should be the case. Instead of interpreting the law as it is and leaving the business of making law up to the Congress, I believe that she views the court as having a role in developing the law in our country, being more of an activist judge. And I believe that is the wrong type of judicial philosophy to take to the Supreme Court. Secondly, and as in sort of a subset of that issue, I'm very concerned about her views on the Second Amendment right to bear arms. She does not have a specific record of votes, either as a judge or in any other context, with regard to the Second Amendment. But a number of items relating to her background relative to the Second Amendment cause me to believe that she does not have a commitment to sustaining and protecting a strong and broad right to bear arms that belongs to all individual citizens of the United States, wherever they may live. A number of things brought me to that conclusion. When she served on the staff of President Clinton in the 1990s, she worked to reimpose unconstitutional provisions, in my opinion, regarding a firearms ban through executive order. As Solicitor General, the position she currently holds in the Obama administration, she declined to file a brief in the McDonald case, which was the key case where the Second Amendment rights were at stake. A milestone case that directly affirmed that the Second Amendment is applicable to the states and was just recently decided by the Supreme Court, but not with any involvement or input from the Solicitor General of the United States. Now, that and a number of other comments that she has made have caused me to conclude that as we move forward in Second Amendment litigation and decision-making at the Supreme Court, that she will not provide the kind of support and protection for a broad and strong Second Amendment right to bear arms. And that among my major concerns about her willingness to become an activist judge are the reasons that I have decided not to support and to vote against her nomination and her confirmation. I also wanted to point out that on the floor this week we expect to deal with energy legislation, although not major energy legislation in the sense of something like a cap and trade bill. The leader of the Senate, Harry Reid, has indicated that he may or may not bring up an aggressive cap and trade bill later in the fall, but for right now, he's bringing forward a pared-down energy bill that deals primarily with the oil spill in the Gulf and an effort to deal with some other aspects of jobs. This is a circumstance in which the Republicans strongly disagree with the approach taken even in this pared-down bill and will present their alternative. And so you will probably see two votes in the Senate this week on energy, one on the majority leader's bill and the other on the Republican Party's response. And some of the primary differences are the Republican bill will quickly lift the deep water drilling moratorium that the president has imposed, allowing our oil industry to get back in the business of producing, which we believe is very critical for our efforts to try to reduce to the maximum extent possible our dependence on foreign oil. Secondly, we will provide, in the Republican version, a more friendly spill liability formula, a more industry-friendly formula, friendly to the small drillers. One of the concerns is that the very heavy hand that of a regulation that is included in the Democrat bill will not only solve the problem with regard to forcing large producers to be responsible, which the Republican bill as well does, but it will force small producers out of the business. And we don't want to cause ourselves to move to a situation in which we drive all of the small producers and the small businesses dealing with oil production in America out of business, and then just have the big, mega, large producers be the only ones left to be involved in the production or drilling for oil. And because of that, the Republicans want to see a more sensitive and a more sensible policy developed that will enable us to deal with the issues, to make sure that BP pays for the entire responsibility, to make sure that the trust liability for the oil spill liability trust fund is robust and adequate to deal with any possible liability or causes in the future, and to make sure that we implement the kind of regulatory reform that assures that we have safer and more effective processes in the future, but does so in a way that does not drive small operators out of the business. One last thing I'll talk about before I throw it open for questions is that this week Senator Risch and I introduced legislation to stop the president from having the authority to simply on his own designate national monuments across the country without the participation and approval of Congress. Our bill, which is called the National Monument Designation Transparency and Accountability Act, calls for congressional approval within 2 years of any executive order by a president seeking a monument designation. If the two-year deadline passes without congressional approval, then the land would return to its original status. The reason for this legislation is that beginning back with President Clinton and previously, I believe, we've had issues relating to a president simply taking it upon himself to designate lands as monuments and change the status of their management without going to Congress for approval. And in many cases, the reason the president has done so is because the actions the president has taken would not have been supported by Congress and would not have been supported by the people where the land is located. And so this is an effort to bring more involvement by Congress and the people back into the process of these major changes in terms of designation of management for our public lands. With that, I'll stop and throw it open for questions. And first today is George Prentice.
Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to ask you about the F-35 and how Idaho is now out of the running, at least for the first round of the operations and the training. And I'm wondering if you could handicap that and what you've been told or what you sense of why we didn't make the short list.
Yes, first of all, let me say I, like the rest of our delegation, was very disappointed in the decision by the Air Force not to put either the training mission at Gowan Field or the operations mission at Mountain Home Air Force Base. The reasons that we were given in both cases are, with regard to the training mission at Gowan Field, although originally it looked like a one or even a two squadron mission was being considered, ultimately the Air Force determined that they wanted to bed down three squadrons, and there was not space at Gowan Field, in their opinion, to accomplish that without significant construction and facilities costs. And so it was the Air Force's decision with regard to the size of that bed down that caused the problem with the Gowan Field proposal. With regard to Mountain Home Air Force Base, what we were told is that the issue there, again, was the infrastructure and the construction costs of new facilities that would be needed that were not there in some of the other competitors. This is infrastructure costs in terms of operations, in terms of housing, and in terms of other aspects of bedding down the F-35 wings. Now, that having been said, again, I believe I again express very strong disappointment. Your question was on evaluating what the prospects are for the future. I was assured by the general that Idaho, in both cases, will be in the running in the next round, which should be operational and ongoing and hopefully concluded within the next couple of years. And with regard to the question of whether the next round, and by the way, the next round is all operations, not training. And so the next round is all operation considerations. And a single squadron or a two squadron scenario is not at all out of the question, and in fact is a possibility for the next round. So that means that Gowan Field would, I think, return to being a very strong competitor. Secondly, with regard to Mountain Home Air Force Base, some of the infrastructure needs and issues that the Air Force raised there will be working on those, and we are aggressively now working on some of those infrastructure issues. And I believe that Mountain Home Air Force Base, for all of the reasons we've mentioned before, in terms of the cost savings that can occur because of our proximity to the appropriate airspace, will remain and will be a very strong competitor for future bed-down decisions with regard to the F-35.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next is Dave. Dave?
Good morning.
Morning.
Senator, there are dozens of healthcare providers and healthcare businesses in the state that are about ready to go out of business because Idaho hasn't paid its Medicaid bills from last year. I understand that there is funding for that in the jobs bill that's coming up. Is that true or false? And what do you think of that?
Well, there is something. I don't know if it's the same bill that we're talking about, but there's a bill called the Education, Medicaid, and also FAA reauthorization bill that's been offered as a substitute for the House-passed Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization. And it's a $26 billion bill that contains some additional federal spending to deal with a number of things, additional defense spending, I believe there is some education funding as well as funding there to assist in terms of Medicaid support for the states. Now, if that's the bill that we're thinking of, and I think it is the bill you're referring to, the problem that we see with the way that this proposal is being put together is it's yet again another $26.1 billion of spending. Some of that spending is offset, but the offset is increased taxes on small businesses and on other businesses, as well as cuts in defense spending in some areas that have raised many, many concerns, and then also additional deficit spending. And so although the need is real, the need for education support and the need for Medicaid assistance, the fact is that Congress must move forward and deal with these needs without adding to the national debt and without raising taxes. And we can do so. As we have mentioned before, as our leadership here in the Senate has come forward with bill after bill to provide additional federal spending on one project or another, there is nearly $100 billion of unspent stimulus dollars in the stimulus bill. In fact, there's many, many more dollars that are unspent in other parts of the stimulus bill that could be rerouted to help in these areas if that's what Congress determines needs to be done. Now, you'll recall that I didn't support the stimulus package at the outset, but Congress, in its wisdom, has voted to spend this $800 billion. And if this $800 billion is going to be spent, it certainly ought to be used as offsets for this additional spending that Congress is now considering. So there's a battle now going on the budget side of this issue, but there is legislation in place that would provide some assistance to the states on the Medicaid issue if we're able to get past these deficit increase issues.
Do you happen to know where that $100 billion that we haven't spent is not being spent on?
That's a very fair question. I believe that a big portion of it is in dollars that was headed toward education, and so we could direct it to this education funding right here. And then there's another big section in other parts of the bill that I'm going to have to go get the detail work out and try to get that to you because I don't have it on the tip of my tongue right now, Dave. But there's in all aspects of the bill, there are portions that simply have not been paid out because the government has not even been efficient enough to spend all this money that was given the authorization to spend.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I know that today that Rory and Jason are not with us, and so Leslie, you're next on the list.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You mentioned your opposition to the Supreme Court nominee and reasons why. What is your feeling about the eventual vote? Is this going to be party line, or what do you predict?
Well, it's becoming pretty clear that the vast majority, if not all, of the members of the president's party, the Democratic Party, will support the nomination. And there, so far, are about four or five Republicans who have also said that they also will support the nomination. So there's very little likelihood that she will fail to be confirmed. But for the most part, I expect it to be that the opposition will primarily come from Republicans.
And getting to the energy bill that isn't cap and trade, but it's still energy.
Right.
With the BP Gulf Oil spill or accident, is it a case of if regulations already in place had been observed that would not have happened?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, and that's a question that I have been asking. And one of the things that the Republican bill does is to create a bipartisan spill commission, 10 members, 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans, that would be tasked with answering that question as well as other questions and issues that have come up as a result of the spill. In other words, did we have a lack of enforcement of solid, good, existing safety requirements and rules and regulations? Or do we have a defective system of rules and regulations that needs to be improved? And the answers to those questions remain a problem right now. And ultimately, I believe we've got to get the answer to them, because we will need to know whether it is a question of enforcement or a question of proper policy.
And one quick question. We haven't heard anything about the Clean Water Restoration Act. Is that still lurking somewhere?
It is still lurking somewhere, and I still have a hold on it. If we're talking about the act that changes the designation and calls literally all waters in the country waters of the United States, correctly?
Yes.
Correct? Yes. This legislation remains in limbo, or as you said, is still lurking, and its posture is this. It was voted out of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, on which I sit, on a pretty much party line vote. I don't remember the exact vote, but I believe it was either straight party line or very close to party line. But it was voted out of the committee on a partisan vote, and I immediately placed a hold on the bill, as I believe did several other senators, although I'm not certain of that. And since that time, the majority leader has not been of a mind to try to bring it forward and force the issue on the floor. I personally believe the reason that the majority leader has not tried to force the issue on the floor is that he does not have 60 votes to get it crammed through. If they had 60 votes, I think he probably would try to cram it through. So that, and I don't believe that's likely to change between now and the election. But if the Democratic Party suffers losses in the election and decides to have a lame duck session to see what final things they can force through before the new Congress takes over, they may be able to get votes then from some senators who, for example, may have been defeated or who have decided to retire and who would be willing to vote at this time for such a bill. So I think the threat is still out there, and water users, literally anybody whose business or recreation or personal life depends on the use of water, which is almost everybody in America, should remain very alert and focused on this legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you. That goes through our entire list for the day. I want to thank everybody for being on and look forward to our visit next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.